Welcome to Sleeves Rolled Up. I'm your host, Julia Martino. When faced with the serious and complex needs of people in our society, many throw up their hands in exasperation. At the Salvation Army, however, we roll up our sleeves and get to work.
Kia ora koutou katoa, ngā mihi mahana ki koutou I raro I te ingoa o Ihu Karaiti. And then welcome back everyone to another episode of Pathways and Politics, brought to you by the Social Policy and Parliamentary Unit of the Salvation Army. I'm your host, Ana Ika, Social Policy Analyst and Advocate for the Salvation Army. And today we have the wonderful opportunity to speak with National MP and fellow believer in Christ, Melissa Lee. So thank you so much, Melissa, for joining us on the podcast today. Annyeong haseyo. It's about the extent of my career.
Very good. Thank you, Anna. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for taking the time to come on our podcast today to talk about faith and politics, and particularly with the upcoming elections this year. Melissa, if you just want to introduce yourself and tell us a bit about yourself and how you came to be in politics.
I guess, for those people who actually don't know me, I've been in politics for coming up 15 years. I became a member of parliament in 2008 when John Key became prime minister. Before that, I used to host and produce a television show on TV1 called Asia Down Under. And before that, I used to be a print journalist. I was born in Korea, raised in Malaysia and Australia before coming to New Zealand. I came to New Zealand because mum and dad actually came for a visit one time and absolutely fell in love, and typical Korean family, unmarried girl and boy studying. Mum and dad say, you're moving. We had no choice but to move to New Zealand. So we became New Zealand residents reluctantly, my brother and I. But, you know, fell in love with it within 6 months of being here. Hated it when I first arrived. I thought, oh my God, where are the people? Where are the cafes? Where are the good food? Back in those days, you couldn't even find a decent cup of coffee or decent Chinese takeaway store or restaurants. It was pretty basic, you know, lemon chicken's not really Chinese food, really.
Yeah.
Now you can get a whole bunch of variety, and I think it's actually a good thing. So how did I actually get into politics? I think I got into politics from when I was about 7 years old, first grade. And Korea, you know, it's very competitive. And in my primary school, there were 65 kids in my class. And you compete to become class president. And I chose to stand as class president. I was the shortest kid in class, but I was the loudest kid in class. I was bolshy, and I literally thought, yeah, I need to stand and take leadership and campaign to be class president, and I became class president. So that was my first foray into politics. And then while I was at university, I guess I was, I got involved with Overseas Students Association, and I was the secretary of the association in my first year. Second year, I became president. Yeah, so got involved with student politics a bit, lobbied the Australian government to actually get better service for international students who were paying humongous amounts of fees but never got any service from the individual universities. Managed to actually get some service after that. I guess that's my foray. And then when I moved to New Zealand, I got involved with the community politics, I guess. So I was the deputy chair of the Korean Association, deputy chair of the Korean Women's Association. But I sort of stayed away from the actual politics, national politics. But in the background, I was helping some candidates, like the first ever Chinese member of parliament, Pansy Wong, when she stood. I remember going to Christchurch and actually campaigning for her. You know, not actively because I was a journalist, but wanted to give her moral support. And, you know, yeah, that's how I sort of got involved with politics.
Oh, well, that's really interesting. I was just thinking, Melissa, how you went from journalism to politics. And I guess from an outsider's perspective, that's not in, you know, that doesn't really understand, or that's not in politics or not in journalism. Like from an outsider's perspective, it seems like, you know, politicians are trying to get on side with journalists. And so just thinking about that, as a journalist, you know, you have the ability to be able to influence you know, how the things that people think on through media, how much do you think has an influence differences there between politicians and journalism? I don't know if that question makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Journalism has actually changed quite a lot since I was a journalist. I came to New Zealand in 1988, and my first job in news media as a reporter for a newspaper was in 1989. That ages me a little bit. Back in those days, when you're a reporter, a journalist, you reported facts. Your opinion never appeared in the story unless you're actually writing an opinion piece.
Yeah.
And so you're reporting. So what happened, who, when, where, how, why, is what you actually reported. And you often had to get both sides of the story. And that is basics of a journalist to get the right story, to get the story. And, you know, and the balance, I think, is really important. And your desperate attempt to make sure that your political views or your religious views or your prejudices don't actually influence the way that you actually write. And I think when I was a journalist for a very long time, a lot of people thought I didn't belong to a political party on purpose, because I didn't want people to think that I was biased towards a particular party. I supported the National Party and voted National, but I was probably harder when I was interviewing National MPs or National ministers, for example. You know, when I'm interviewing them, I was probably harsher than them, because I probably did not want people to think that I was soft on my people. And I think National people probably thought, why is she so harsh? She's probably Labour.
Yeah.
So really, I think that's what happened. And then I think one of the limitations that I actually found as a journalist, and the reason why I chose to actually sort of finally take the plunge to get into politics, was that, you know, at the time I was actually doing a lot of stories for Asia Down Under. You know, it's highlighting issues for migrants, the disparity in terms of representation, the voices that are actually not heard in parliament. And when you're trying to help people, I think, you know, and raise an issue, as a journalist, you can raise an issue, but you can't really fix it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think, you know, and as a politician, you can actually fix things. For example, during COVID, you know, I had so many people who actually were stranded and who were desperately trying to actually come home. And I had a situation where a young lady, you know, was stuck in London and her mother had passed away and she was desperate to come home. And the government, you know, I had to actually sort of, you know, lobby on her behalf to actually make sure that she gets, you know, MIQ voucher. And, you know, just chasing the ministries and the minister's office to try and get her home in time so she can actually be with her family. That's what an MP can do.
Yeah.
As a journalist, you couldn't. I couldn't, you know, when I was a journalist, in situations like that. So I think that's a difference. And I think, you know, when you are able to utilize being a member of parliament, I guess in a sense that's sort of the power of being an MP to actually help people, I think that's where it actually means a lot.
Oh, that's really interesting. I never that was really interesting what you said about
as a journalist, you actually said this girl can't come home.
Yeah,
you
know, yeah.
You highlight the story and you actually
then,
write
as
it.
As an MP, you fix it,
And you can actually fix it. You can get the voucher to get her home.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's awesome. I'm just going to... So the reason why we called this podcast Pathways in Politics, obviously the politics part is pretty obvious, but the pathway section, our co-founder, William Booth, he said this quote, for the Salvation Army, our job is to alleviate temporal misery. And so we do that through our food banks, for our social services, through our reintegration programs. But the whole purpose of why we alleviate temporal misery is in order to create a pathway to the cross of Jesus Christ and his redemption in providing eternal misery. And so that's kind of why we called this Pathways in Politics. And so that Pathways is highlighting that faith aspect of what we do, and wanted to bring it back to you, Melissa, and wanted to ask a question around your faith and the influence your faith has had in you being an MP.
Wow. According to some people, I'm some crazy Christian, fanatical Christian Parliament. because of the way that I actually voted in Parliament. My voting record is actually fairly conservative. Voted against conversion therapy ban bill. Voted against gay marriage. I'm proud of it. I'm proud that I was able to represent the voices who were potentially in the minority, I guess. You know, there are Christian members of Parliament, but sometimes you sort of think we are so small in numbers now. And we don't talk about prayer breakfast normally, but we do actually have one.
Yeah. And is it hard for you, Melissa? When you were talking, I was thinking about the story of Esther. I mean, how Mordecai says to Esther, you know, maybe you were made for such a time as this, and how difficult that would have been for Esther to be able to stand in the presence of the king to advocate for or to bring, you know, that to save the people of Israel. And now I'm thinking of, I guess, the challenges you would have, Melissa, as an MP, to be a minority, but to stand firm in your faith. Like, how do you do that? To be able to stand firm in the midst of people thinking that you're crazy?
Well, I know that I'm not crazy.
Yeah.
It was pretty tough, actually, during the campaign of the transgender community, and, you know, who some members, I think not all, some members of the community decided to take it upon themselves to run some sort of a hate campaign where they put the 7 national members' photograph on social media with hate messages. And, you know, it was constantly, it was barrage of hate that was actually coming through. And you sort of think, oh my goodness, you know, this is really, really harsh. And, you know, as a member of parliament, you sort of take it that, you know, it's part and parcel of your job, because, you know, you don't go into politics thinking that, you know, you're going to win over everyone. They're going to be people who are not going to be happy with what you do. They're going to be people who absolutely love you, and they're going to be people who absolutely hate you. But you're there to do a job, and I believe in the job that I'm actually doing. And, you know, but during that time, oh my gosh, that was pretty harsh, I think. And it just got to a point where they were not only threatening me, but threatening my family. And yeah, I was, oh gosh. I was... I was sitting there one day just working, just visiting people in the electorate. And then I just needed to take time out. And I sat at a park and I was just praying. I said, this is so hard. And, this is quite emotional. And I said, this is really hard, you know? Am I supposed to quit? And I just prayed. I said, show me a pathway out of this. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. And you know what? Out of the blue, I had a phone call. And my prayer was answered. Just like that. Out of the blue, I had a phone call from someone that I wasn't expecting, who basically said, I just wanted to thank you for voting the way you did. And that makes me really emotional. That I prayed and God answered. That's why I'm still there.
We often build relationships with MPs, but that's often because we're doing in select committees with different MPs. And I realise that the select committee that you're in, that we don't often, the remit of our work doesn't often cross into that. So I, in my research to try and ask you some questions, I went back and read your maiden speech. And some of the things that you talked about, racial divisiveness, you talked about government dependence and the value of hard work, you talked about crime and building safer communities for Aotearoa, you talked about the safety of our tamariki and a justice system that is meant to keep our families safe. I mean, if you're listening in and you're wondering, yeah, that's an awesome speech, that's really relevant to our time. Does it concern you, Melissa, that you said that speech 15 years ago, and yet those are still the prevailing issues that Aotearoa is facing today, and probably has gotten a lot worse since you said that speech back in 2008?
Yes, it does. It's gotten worse. Crime's actually gotten worse. And I've, you know, every 10 hours, we've got young children who should be at school potentially stealing cars and ram-raiding shops and actually, you know, doing crime. And, you know, and what looks like a failure in the system, you know, and lots of people just blame police. But, you know, I think police are also trying their very best to actually sort of, you know, curb and do what they need to do their job. But, you know, there is something wrong in our system. I think there is something wrong in our families where children are not going to school. There is something wrong in our education system where children are, you know, it's like only 46% of our children are at school attending classes. So what happened to the 54% of children who are constantly, you know, truant from school? Why are they not going to school to be educated? And what are the parents actually doing? I know the economy is in crisis. You know, there is a cost of living crisis where people are constantly having to potentially work harder to earn what they're earning. And, you know, groceries are so much more expensive. You can see it every time you actually go to the supermarket. You know, what used to cost, you know, $50 now costs $100. And it is putting a major stress on families. But the thing is that it is our children who actually suffers the worst. And, you know, the former Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern was the Minister for, you know, child poverty. Well, we've got worse child poverty now. And how are we supposed to fix that? And that is the role that we are now working on as opposition, to try and come up with policies that we can actually take to election to actually convince people that we can actually govern better than what the Labour government can.
And so what are some of those policies, Melissa, if you can highlight a few, if there are any that you guys have, National has released publicly, that you can talk about that will fix a lot of these issues that are facing our tamariki?
Well, I think, you know, we have actually released several policies so far, and there'll be more coming out as we get closer to the election. But in terms of the education policy, you know, our children are failing. And the thing is that, you know, when you have children who actually attend, you know, decile one school, where majority of them actually fail school, you have a major problem. And, you know, our children are not able to read, write, and do maths. And so the education policy, one of the things that we actually said was that you need to have a compulsory 1 hour of maths, English, right? And, you know, reading, writing, and maths should be the focus of where our children need to start their education. The other one that, which I really like, is the military academy concept that was actually announced fairly early on. And one of the things that we absolutely thrilled by is that some of the children that we've actually seen in the military academies that have existed is that they would potentially take 3 public transports to actually get to school, because the discipline and the education that they were actually getting at those schools was so much better than what normal schools can actually provide for them. Some children actually, you know, don't do very well in normal schools, and I think military academies can. But in the military academy that we're actually talking about, you know, some people call it boot camps. But what I think, when children actually do wrong, and if they are consistently doing wrong, they actually need a change in circumstance, change in environment where they are taught responsibility. And I think military academies can actually provide that for them. And also, I think, you know, one of the things that I've actually mentioned to my colleagues is that sometimes, you know, just a very short term visit to those places, the boot camp, doesn't necessarily work. But, you know, more sort of longer term to actually get them settled into the routine of, you know, doing things and being responsible for their actions and potentially learning skills that could give them jobs, I think is what they need. One of the things that I, you know, you talk about turning up to select committee, and I used to be, I have actually been a chair of social services, and, you know, Salvation Army have actually appeared before social services to talk about issues and submitting on bills. One of the things that I remember having a conversation about with Paula Bennett, Honourable Paula Bennett, who was the then Minister for Social Development, one of the things that she told me that really shocked me was that people who were unemployed and some of the circumstances that she's actually sort of discovered as a new minister back then, you know, back in 2008, I think it was, or nine, was that these people didn't even know that they had to get up, get dressed, get in the car, get a bus, whatever it is, get to work on time, do the job, eat food, lunch, do the job, come home at the end of the day. And people did not even know the basics how to be an employee. And, you know, MSD was trying to teach them that you actually have to get up, you know, you need to plan your time so that you know how long it takes you to shower in the morning, to get dressed, to, and if you're going to work in town, how long does it take you to drive, or how long does it take you on a bus to actually get there, that you need to plan these things ahead so you get to work on time. The very idea that people had to do that was actually missing from some of these people who are actually on long-term benefits. And I think, you know, there is a system failure and it needs to be fixed.
So how do you, what's the, because obviously working here at the Salvation Army, we see a lot of dependence in our different services. And so at the same time, we're trying to afi and support our whānau. But at the same time, I acknowledge what you're saying, that you want to break those dependencies in finding alternative ways to be able to instill the value of work. Or do you think there are any ways in regards to policy to be able to break those circuits of not working, of not contributing back to society, of not being dependent on welfare? Do you think there are any circuit breaker policies that could do that? Or is it a combination of many things? Or is it early intervention? Or for adults, is it too late? Does that mean we need to focus on young people?
I think there is not just a one answer. I don't think there's ever one policy that's just going to be the silver bullet that actually sort of, you know, fixes everything. And, you know, so you have issues with adults who actually, you know, have grown up with these kinds of issues, you know, whether it's actually drug or alcohol dependencies and inability to, you know, with no education or, you know, lack of education, who can't actually get a proper job, who actually need some skill training. And then you've actually got, you know, young children who are actually sort of moving into this sort of area. And so you need multi-pronged approach, I think. And one of the things that, you know, I think when a government's actually working well is, like, for example, when Paula Bennett, you know, I don't really do a lot with social Ministry of Social Development or social services topics, because those are not my portfolio areas. But one of the things that I remember from when Paula Bennett was the minister was that we had a major issue with teenage pregnancies. And, you know, her policy of actually trying to support and empower young women, one, if they were pregnant and they decide to have the baby and keep the baby, and then we will actually encourage them to go back to school. Usually they're teenage high school kids who actually, you know, we encourage them to get back to school to actually finish their education. And then we will provide them with child support, you know, child minding services, child care, so that they didn't have to worry about who's going to look after the baby while I'm at school. So that service plus an incentive for things like if they do a parenting course, there'll be an extra $10 to their benefit. If they do a budgeting course, there'll be another extra $10. So it's about encouragement.
Yeah.
And also about teaching them the responsibility that you need to manage your money. You actually need to, you know, and also they, I think, earmark some of the spending on food rather than, you know, tobacco or alcohol that you can use. Yeah, those kinds of things. So that, you know, they actually understand that the money that you actually get is for your support. It's not for you to pilfer away, that you actually need to have food in the home for the child as well as yourself and to look after yourself. I think that that actually helped, reduce teenage pregnancy in a major way.
Yeah,
I think that was social investment in a way. And I think that is really, really important, you know, to teach people, to empower them that they can actually manage their money, that, you know, they are, you know, they do parenting course to actually sort of feel more confident that they can actually be a good parent, how to be a parent. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, and I'd absolutely agree, Melissa, with our State of the Nation report, we've continued to highlight that teenage pregnancy is declining in New Zealand. It's still relatively higher there compared to other OECD countries, but in regards to how we're tracking, that has been declining. And so, so I hear you on that. I know our time, we've come to the end. So I just wanted to give you the chance, Melissa, if you've got any last words, particularly around elections. We didn't even get to elections to talk about upcoming elections or encouragement for people to go out and vote, or what would your advice be to those that are listening that are still I'm trying to figure out how to navigate the whole elections process? And I'll give you the last word.
maybe not one word. participating in an election process is, I think, is a democratic right that, we are privileged to have in New Zealand. There are many countries in the world where people can't actually vote or participate in the democratic process. In New Zealand, MMP system means that you have two votes, one for the party and one for the candidate. I'm not going to tell you who to vote for because it is your choice. And it is your right to exercise it however you actually want to. The only thing that I would mention is that it is the party vote that will decide who the government is. So if you want a Labour government, you need to party vote Labour. If you want a National government, you need to party vote National.
Cool. Thanks so much, Melissa.
And
yeah, really, really enjoyed having this talanoa with you. Before we wrap up, I just wanted to read a verse. This is from Psalm 90, verse 17. And it says, and this is my prayer for you, Melissa, as you continue in your really important role. It's one of the oldest Psalms, and Moses says, "May the favor of the Lord our God rest on us. Establish the work of our hands for us. Yes, establish the work of our hands." So I guess my prayer and the prayer of the Salvation Army for you, Melissa, in your role, is that the Lord will continue to establish the work of your hands. And just an encouragement to all the listeners, Romans continues to tell us to pray for those who God has placed in power in our government. And so that's our encouragement to all, that we continue to pray for the 120 MPs that the Lord has placed to govern our country. So that's our prayer for you, Melissa, and pray that the Lord would continue to bless you in your work.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Sleeves Rolled Up, a podcast by the Salvation Army. For more information on what we covered in this episode, see the link in the show notes.